97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
I'm Heidi Harrison from Mark Reardon. How you doing? Follow me, all the socials, Heidi Harris Show. You can also find my podcast on Odyssey app, Heidi Harris Show. Since I do work for Odyssey. Thrilled to be here hanging with the gang, Sue, Fred, Ethan. Just passed his 1 year anniversary. How's it going, bud? You still in love and all that good stuff?
Still kicking it.
Did she get rid of all your stuff yet? All your furniture and all your stuff?
Well, I lived in a house with a bunch of dudes. It was a big old bachelor pad before we got married. And her place was already pretty much fully furnished. So we didn't really have to take a lot of my stuff there. And I didn't have a lot of furniture or anything. So, I mean, it was kind of a perfect transition in that sense. But she has let me completely take over. We have an apartment right now, two-bedroom apartment. She's completely let me take over the guest bedroom and turned it into my baseball/sports memorabilia autograph room/office. And so it is all decked out with all kinds of fun stuff up on the walls. So I take great pride in my room. And whenever people come and stay over, I always tell them, good luck sleeping because there's so much to look at on the walls. You're going to have a hard time falling asleep.
Good woman. Good woman giving you your space. Now, do you have the Bass Pro recliner or what you got in there?
No recliners. Ducks, see, I think that's the trade-off, right? There's no recliners, she did not let me take my deer head. I do hunt. I'm a deer hunter. And she did not let me take my 11-point buck that I have mounted at home. She did not let me bring that. But, you know, that's a fair trade-off. I will take my sports memorabilia room if it means leaving my mounted deer back at home in Illinois.
Okay. What does it cost to, I mean, I should know this answer, but I don't hunt. What does it cost to mount a deer? A white-tailed deer? What kind of deer is it?
It is a white-tailed deer. Yeah, it kind of depends. Okay. It depends on, you know, I think a few different things. Like, probably depends on, like,
I mean, obviously the size and the complexity. I get
the
that.
The form in which you want it mounted and things like that. Mine probably cost around $400.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. I bet mine was probably around $400. It might be more now. But yeah, that's what mine cost back in 2019.
Taxidermy is definitely an art. I have a friend who is a bow hunter, and he's gotten, I think they call it, I may screw this up, World Series of, it's not World Series, something with bows, where he's gotten some kind of record, and his house is full of everything from a polar bear.
Oh my goodness.
I mean, every kind of deer. It's not World Series, but it's something like Grand Slam. Does that sound right? It's
like
a baseball term. Maybe Grand Slam of some kind of thing with bow hunting.
Big game?
And the tax, now, I don't know what it's something to do with how many you've gotten and where you've gotten them.
Okay.
The kind of animals you've gotten, not like you're out slaughtering everything for no reason. The kind of animals you've gotten. I think it's called the Grand Slam, but the taxidermy is just, I mean, these animals are just,
oh, it's no
gorgeous.
Joke. It's extremely expensive. But I mean, there's definitely money to be made there. But hunting can get really expensive if you're, I've only killed one big buck in my time hunting, which has probably been for like, I don't know, close to 10 years now. So, I mean, but if people that go and pay for, you know, it's a lot of people, you know, lease land and they'll go to an area where you can, you know, there's big bucks. They basically feed all the big bucks there. And I mean, that can get really expensive if you're mounting them every year. Fred just pulled it up here. It is Grand Slam. It refers to a successful harvest of specific game animals using bow and arrow, often the goal of achieving a particular hunting milestone. So I guess there's different ones depending on what you are hunting, whether it be, you know, deer, wild sheep, turkey, etc. So kind of interesting.
Yeah, it's all that stuff. Wild sheep and goat, you know, the mountain goats and all these crazy things that, now how much meat, I guess it depends once again how large the deer is. How much meat do you get off a deer like that?
Any deer will last you a long time. I mean, it obviously depends on how much you're cooking, but like for us, I mean, like I wasn't able to go last year and my dad went and he killed one and like, I still have stuff that he gave me frozen in that's in my freezer that I haven't cooked yet. So, I mean, it'll last you a while. It'll last us close to a year. So, ends up being a nice way to save a little money also.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's sad how many deer get run into cars over the course of the every season. You know, it's very frustrating. We went up to Yellowstone last year, and my husband has these things on his car. They are deer alerts. Have you ever seen them? The little tiny plastic things that when you go a certain speed, they're kind of buried inside the grill of the car, and you go a certain speed, and they make a sound that only the deer can hear.
No, I have not heard of that.
Oh, it's amazing.
Have you heard of that, Fred?
Yeah, that's
no.
You never heard of it? You haven't heard of those, Fred?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, they're hi, Fred. How are you today?
Hey, I'm good. I'm good.
Good. Yeah, my mother-in-law had them up in Montana, and they're just little tiny plastic things, and they fit in the grill of your car, and when you go a certain speed, they make a sound that only the deer can hear. And we're driving into Yellowstone about, 6 o'clock in the morning, so we want to catch all the good stuff, right? And all of a sudden, this elk is coming across the road with all of her girlfriends, and I'm going, oh my gosh. I go, she's coming. She's not stopping. We're going 45, 50 miles an hour, and this deer and all of her girls were going to come right in front of us, and we got about 50 feet away from her, she jumped back off the road.
Huh. I mean, worked, I guess boy. It makes sense needing it in that area of the country. I mean, you could say that also in, the Midwest in certain areas too. But for sure up there, Yellowstone area where all the national parks are up there, I guess that's interesting. I've never heard of that.
Yeah, because nobody wants anybody to die. You don't want to have to hit them. And then besides the inconvenience and the possible death of everybody involved, you don't want to have to deal with that. But it worked magically. And I was too, we were going too fast to stop. And she wasn't going to stop. She just kept coming across the road. I couldn't believe it. She didn't care. So it was nuts. Are you a hunter, Fred?
Oh, no. I've never hunted. I don't think I've ever shot a gun.
Sue sneaking in a little laugh there.
Fred is not a hunter. He's as much of a hunter as I am.
Hi, Sue. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I am doing well. I can't wait for Sue's news coming up here in just a couple of minutes.
Yeah, eventually.
Yeah, never. You fired a gun, Sue?
Let me think about that. I don't think so. Maybe a BB gun at someone's farm a long time ago.
Really?
But okay. I really need to, that's something I should do. I'm not anti-learning how to do that.
Well, I'm not saying you have to, but if you have a gun, you need to know how. If you don't have a gun, then, you just have to know how to be careful around them. That's all.
Right. I've known Ethan for a while, and I never knew that you were a deer hunter until just now.
It's kind of the
same, Fred.
It's kind of, well, first off, I feel like there's a kind of a specific personality that goes along with that. You're just kind of like country lifestyle, and that is not me. But my mom grew up a city gal. My dad did not. He grew up in Southern Illinois, country guy. And that's kind of like that little piece of me. I enjoy it. It's fun, but I also enjoy that time with my dad. So that's kind of just a fun weekend that we get to spend together. But no, I don't know. It's not something I advertise a bunch about myself.
Well, yeah, but there's a huge population of deer. And if you don't cull a certain amount every year, there's a certain amount, they just have to take out a certain amount. So good for you. And then you get all that fresh meat. Although I'm not a big fan of venison, but I'll leave that to you. I'm Heidi Harris in for Mark Reardon. I've been looking forward to this all day. Sue's news.
These allegations are deeply concerning.
Does the president have any comment?
We're not going to comment.
It's not clear messaging.
No, 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 no.
And now, Sue's News. Brought to you by Sue.
Ethan the Hunter. Who knew?
You learn something every day.
You really do. Okay, it is National Gummy Worm Day. National I Love Horses Day. National Be a Dork Day. Okay, Fred, you have the bell.
Oh,
he's getting it right now. He's getting it right now.
Okay. Thank you. And finally,
timing.
Okay. National Tapioca Pudding Day. Oh, now there are people who love the tapioca. Michael is one of these people. I do not like the little weird globules in anything I eat. Fred, thoughts?
Oh, I'm anti-tapioca.
Thank you, Heidi Harris.
No, chocolate for me if I'm going to have pudding.
Uh-huh. Globules for you, Ethan.
I don't think I've ever even had tapioca pudding, but it doesn't look very appetizing.
Yeah. If you like bubble tea, you like tapioca.
Never had that either.
Yeah, just hard pats on that. I think you're fine. But there are tapioca pudding lovers. I'm just not one of them. Okay, we're going to have a little quiz. Now, Ethan will know the answer to this. I'm going to play you some audio. This movie came out 37 years ago today in 1988. See if you could tell what movie this is.
I didn't get that message.
Maybe you should have put it on the bulletin board.
Sorry, Hans, wrong guess.
Would you like to go for double jeopardy where the scores can really change?
These are very bad for you. Just the fly in the ointment, Hans. The monkey in the wrench.
What do you think,
that's Bruce,
Fred?
That's Bruce. I'm sorry, did I?
That is correct. Wait, do you know the movie? Sorry, Fred. I always let Fred go first. He's Hall of Famer.
I don't know the answer, so go ahead.
Heidi, come on. You knew it.
It's the movie with the tall building.
Yes, that's true. It's Die Hard.
Oh,
Fred,
thank
hit the bell.
You.
Hit that bell.
That's one of my favorite Christmas movies.
Exactly. I thought that you might know that. It's a Christmas movie, even though it came out in July. We'll just overlook that, Fred. Those of us who still believe that it's a Christmas movie, it was set at Christmas.
Never seen it.
We'll never get over Bruce Willis in the tank top.
No, we won't.
He was just so hot. It was such a great movie.
Ethan, put that on the list.
I know. The list is getting so long.
And then, on this day in history, 19 years ago, in 2006, Twitter was released to the public.
Mm.
That's right, wow. Twitter is not even 20 years old. Doesn't that blow your mind? It blew mine this morning.
How much time we've all spent on it.
Has grown into by far my favorite social media page.
Has it really? Were you a Snapchat person like the kids?
Yeah, in high school I was definitely a Snapchat fan. I liked Instagram. That was fun. But Twitter, there's just so much information on sports. The sports world goes through Twitter. Quite literally. And also, there's just a lot of funny stuff on Twitter. Remember, last week, I don't remember who was hosting, but I was scrolling on Twitter at one point during, I think it was an interview, and I just started sitting there laughing, and Sue's like laughing at me laughing. And I turned, and I just showed her the stupidest meme, and I don't even remember what it was. She's like, "This is what you're laughing at?" I was like, yeah. I know.
Ethan, didn't you just post something on Twitter like last hour?
Yeah, I tend to be pretty active on Twitter. I'm trying to get my
on X. We should be correct.
X, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did. I just posted a quote from Fred. Brought in some really awesome All Star Game programs since the All Star Game is tonight.
Ooh.
From back when it was in St. Louis. The last two have been 1966 and 2009. Now he's reading a quote in the 2009 one that said, "Everyone wants to play in St. Louis. Just ask the guys who play there now. One Cardinal after another swears it's true. Opponents tell them they want to be a part of what goes on at Busch Stadium." And it was a little melancholy because it's not really the case anymore.
Aw, that's kind of nice. Aww. Fred has everything, Heidi.
Everything.
He's got it. Everything. Capital E, capital T. Amazon's Prime Day was a huge success. To the tune of $24 billion.
Holy.
That is the equivalent, they say, of two Black Fridays.
Wow.
And apparently AI was a big part of the success. So I thought, I don't really understand how AI was a part of the success. So I looked it up, but apparently what AI does is recommend products for shoppers. So if you're Googling something, AI will come up and say, here's what you can get on Prime today at a discount. And it generates product descriptions. They say AI use in Prime Day was up 3,300%.
Wow. Oh, my goodness. From last year?
So 3,300, a normal person would say, but I can't manage that. Yes.
Wow.
That's just nuts.
Okay, wait a minute. Now, does that mean that I, as a shopper, I was actively using the AI, or the AI was used to steer me toward a certain product?
A little bit of both. And mostly it's used to steer you. But what the browsers now use it. So when you do Google something or look something up, they generally give you an AI answer. My phone does that.
Yeah,
right?
I'm getting it all the time now. And I don't know if I've got something set wrong on my settings, but even my emails come with a AI summary of what's in my email.
Oh, yeah, that's the new Gemini on Gmail.
Yes.
Gmail has the new AI, I guess, thing called Gemini, where it'll I don't know if
it does it for you.
Yeah, it's summer. It'll send them out for you, kind of communicate what you're trying to communicate. It's crazy.
What does it say? What's the summary? J-U-N-K?
Yeah,
it gives you little bullet points of what's coming up.
It's crazy.
So you know.
Don't you love corporate email? Every once in a while I get on the corporate email, not very often. But if I do, it's always, oh, somebody left something in the break room. Or I'm like, are you kidding me? I don't want to get on email and read this. Okay, sorry. Did I say that?
Well, the parents of a five-year-old boy over Prime woke up one morning to find out that he'd ordered a whole bunch of expensive toys on Amazon while they were asleep. You know, that happens quite often. Now, this kid managed to spend over $3,000, but the parents were surprised because they have facial recognition on their phones. And they said what this kid had done was looked under the TV, you know, in the piece of furniture that holds up the TV. Somebody had left an old iPhone in there. And the kid, he's five, charged it, got into it, and then ordered like multiple driving toys, like the cars you get on and drive as a kid.
5 years old?
That is
five.
Unbelievable.
I don't know if I can do that at my age.
Yeah. I think mom and dad should encourage him so he can buy them all houses when he grows up.
Well, that's a good point, too. But yeah, he spent $3,000 plus worth of stuff. And, you know, if he has the understanding, that was part of the debate, if he has the understanding to plug in the phone, to go into an old phone, to call up Amazon, and to order things he specifically wanted, it wasn't as though he was going, la, 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 six of this or what. No, he actually chose what he wanted. So the debate, of course, is how purposeful was that? Pretty purposeful.
Here's where kids go wrong in these situations. This was executed perfectly up to this point by this five-year-old. Where you forget you can... What you forget, right, is that mom and dad can see those charges and they can question how they got there, right, when those packages show up. That's when things get sticky. Kids are probably just, oh, I'll just hide him in my room. Like, that's probably what the thought was.
And maybe, I mean, he is five. I don't know if one goes to repercussions that quickly.
Yeah,
he's just got the smarts to actually get in there, which I just found to be kind of amazing. Okay.
That's amazing. But wait a second. If the parent should be to blame for having a kid that's been on the computer this much at 5 years old.
Yeah.
That he knows how to get onto the phone.
Good point.
There's a math professor. It's so hot here. There's a math professor from the University of Cambridge who shared a hack online how to cool down a hot car fast. And I haven't tried this yet, but I just saw it. I guess I could try it. Instead of blasting the AC and waiting forever for it to cool down, try this. Okay. First, you roll down your passenger side window, then open and close your driver's side door four or five times, like you're fanning the air. And what you're doing is forcing the hot air inside your car out and pulling the cooler air in. And apparently it's effective. One test showed it dropped the inside temp by about 20 degrees in just seconds.
Wow.
So to review, you get in, roll down the passenger side window, then open and close your driver's side door four or five times. If somebody wants to try that, let me know how it goes at Susan6768 on X. And this isn't a new idea, by the way. It's been circulating the internet since before 2016. But Thrillist.com ran an experiment to find the fastest way, and it was one of them. So maybe it works. Fred, I feel like you should do this.
I've got it memorized now. I think I will try it.
I think
because I'm curious.
I'd be a little more concerned about what people would be like that were looking at me do this way. Is he okay? Just keep slamming his car door. Like, you might have an anger issue.
That's a good question. Do you slam it? Open
no,
and
you just kind of fan
just
it.
Just kind of close. And yeah, fan.
It still looks pretty
interesting.
Can I
just tell you,
sure.
as a female, that's a little concerning because the first thing we want to do when we go to, let's say, Walmart, I'll just pick on Walmart, is get in the car, close the doors and lock them and not be fanning the door open and close 20 times so someone could sneak up behind us. I'm just saying, right, Sue?
Well, I do understand that. My friend Jane used to always check for men in the back seat when she got in her car at Walmart. You never know, she said. They're sneaky. Okay, now this is my kind of cute story of the day. I love this so much. Okay, a mailman in Texas named Ian Burke adopted a dog he remembered from his old postal route. Fred, give me a bell, please. The owner was a Vietnam vet who recently passed away, and his dog Floyd ended up at a shelter. Now, Ian found out, but had to wait to make sure no one related to the guy came to claim Floyd. And Ian stood outside the shelter waiting for it to open the first day Floyd went up for adoption. And the woman who runs the shelter said it was great to see the old myth about mailmen and dogs isn't always true. And they have the cutest picture online if you do want to look it up. It's adorable. He said he just remembered from, he remembered Floyd from his route, and that Floyd was super nice. He looks like a black lab mix and would just wag his tail off anytime anybody got close. It was just super cute.
That's such a cute dog name.
Floyd. Isn't that nice?
I love that.
And finally in Sue's News, we'll take all the goodness away.
Nope.
Because here's today's random fact. In the 1930s, a brand of toilet paper called Northern Bath Tissue marketed itself with the slogan, quote, 100% splinter free.
Ooh. Oh!
Because that was not always the guarantee with the toilet paper back then. Ooh. Can you imagine?
Splinter free.
Yep, 1930s.
That sounds painful.
Okay. 100% splinter free. And that's it for
Makes you wonder. Makes you wonder what they did before that. That's pretty scary stuff. Thank you, Sue. Appreciate it. I'm Heidi Harrison for Mark Reardon. Well, the Supreme Court's allowing Trump to fire these 1,300 people who work for the Department of Education. You have to ask yourself, as long as they've been around, what have they actually done for anybody? I mean, what have they done for grades? What have they done for anybody except push an agenda that a lot of parents don't want to see? Whatever happened to reading, writing, arithmetic, all that kind of stuff, instead of all the children having to learn all the things that they shouldn't be taught by teachers, you know, like sex stuff and all these other kinds of things. And we know that they haven't really done much for us. Jean Evans is here. She's the state lead for the American Federation for Children. Wanted to chat with her about this good news for the Department of Education. How are you? Welcome to the Mark Reardon Show.
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
This is good news. I guess all this dead weight is going to be gone now. And ultimately, Trump's plan is to get rid of the Department of Education. I know we can't just do that unilaterally, but what do they do for us? Can you remind me what they do? What's their purpose?
Well, they do a couple of things. You know, they were created by Jimmy Carter. This is probably a newer one of the cabinet positions, and the Constitution doesn't even talk about education. So it really is something that should be at the states. But they have taken over a lot of K-12 as well as university stuff. So they handle some of the Pell Grant stuff, some of the student loan things on the higher ed, and then some important things that they do for the K-12 have to do with IDEA, the Individuals with Disabilities Act, which was around before the department was created and will be enforced by a different, you know, like civil rights group or something like that. It is not going to, these are laws that have to be followed. They would just be administered by a different branch or a different agency, I should say.
Well, that's what Trump's talking about, apparently, right? It's kind of just having other agencies pick up the slack with student loans and all of that. It sounds like it could be done.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, to look at the accomplishments, they really haven't done anything. I mean, so the best things that they've done were pieces that were already in place that they kind of took over because they really didn't have anything to do. Like I said, you know, Carter just created this out of thin air. But moving this back to the states, which is, you know, similar to what he's done with the ECCA, the Child Credit for Education, which will be handled by the states. It's in the federal tax code, but it's going to be administered by states. And they're really emphasizing more local control, specifically parents. But the administration of funding will come through states, and the federal government is going to get out of it. And if you talk to superintendents and even school board leaders, a lot of them will tell you that complying with all these crazy federal guidelines is almost as expensive, if not more so, than the funds that they receive. So it's really not going to be this financial disaster that some folks might have you to believe. It's just going to be a little bit different, but it's also going to be way more local. And I really believe, and I think most of the listeners would agree, that somebody in Washington doesn't know near as much about educating the children of St. Louis or rural Missouri or Montana or wherever. That's, you know, somebody in D.C. just doesn't, they don't know what it's like here. It's very different. They're very far away. And also just the levels of bureaucracy that just seem to get in the way with the actual education, which I think you mentioned in the intro.
Absolutely. Jean Evans is with us. She's a state lead for the American Federation for Children. I'm Heidi Harris in for Mark Reardon. I saw a couple of months back that Pete Hegseth was trying to get the military to look into the policies about homeschooling. I had honestly never thought about that before. The idea, the importance of being able to homeschool in various localities, because obviously the laws are different where you might move and kids are moved around enough and shuffled around enough. How about the consistency of being homeschooled? Do you know anything about what's happening with that? Because that's not like a great idea to me.
That is a great idea. I don't know what they're doing at the federal level, but I will tell you that here in Missouri, our military families are big supporters of virtual education and school choice. And a lot of them, you know, if they're moving from state to state or location, having the ability to have that consistent learning, like from a virtual program, is super helpful. But in some states, it's really hard to homeschool. I mean, we have a lot of freedom in Missouri, but in other states, you've got to jump through a lot of hoops, and they make it almost impossible to educate your own child, which is just seems crazy to me. I mean, we are the first educators, right, of our children. So I do believe that would be a great policy for our military people, and we've definitely adopted that here in Missouri.
Yeah, I would love to see that happen on a national level, international level, actually, because when people are, you know, doing a service all over the world, and they do need that consistency of the same kind of teaching and not having to be thrown in different schools every 2 years. Very difficult for kids. I had never even thought about it until I saw that he had looked into it. So I don't know what's going to happen, but that would be great to see.
Yeah.
I like that idea a lot. So talk to me about what else can be done. I mean, I know Trump's very concerned about education. Obviously, he doesn't like the bureaucracy of the Department of Education. Who does? Right. They're not getting their jobs done. What else needs to be done?
Well, we need more school choice in all of the states, blue states, red states, any states, because when people can vote with their feet by leaving a school that's not educating their children or is teaching an ideology that's different than their own, it forces the schools by competition to get better and be more responsive to parents. Unfortunately, for so many parents, they don't have the ability to move. And even if they could move, sometimes the school in the closest district is not that much better. But if they have school choice like they do, say, for example, in Florida. In Florida, about half the students take advantage of some sort of school choice program. And what they have found is that even the public schools have gotten better. Those students are doing better than they were before school choice because the public schools have gotten better at responding to the needs of students and parents. So more school choice drives better results. And also, it just makes sense. Parents should be able to decide where to send their kids. It shouldn't be, you know, assigned by zip code. I mean, they don't tell us where we can grocery shop or what hospital, or even universities. You know, we get Pell Grants. We can take them to any university. But for whatever reason, they think, oh, you can only go to the school that we assign you to because it's, quote unquote, federal or state money. That doesn't make sense in anything else we do. It shouldn't be like that in schools. And school choice is really the answer for a lot of these other problems.
No question. We're speaking with Jean Evans. She is a state lead for the American Federation for Children. I'm Heidi Harrison for Mark Reardon. You know what's interesting? I've heard a lot of people say, well, yeah, but I can't take my kid to a private school and, you know, blah, blah, blah neighborhood. But here's the thing. If every parent, depending on the state, a lot of states have discussed this, where they would give the parents back the amount of money that they spend in taxes to educate their child, right? So you've got that voucher. And if all of a sudden parents in, let's say, a rural area, all of a sudden had vouchers, well, guess what would happen? Little schools would spring up to take that money and educate those kids there. So you wouldn't have to be driving 50 miles, right?
That's exactly right. And that's actually what's happened in Florida. These schools have sprung up in rural areas, micro schools that start out small, but grow. And even if they don't get too big, they are addressing the needs for those particular kids. And, you know, this one size fits all system that we have just really doesn't work. But you're right. When you have the ability to take that money with you to a school that you choose to support and choose to send your student to, these schools, that's a response to the demand, right? The money is there.
That's right.
So the parents can, but also the schools see the writing on the wall and say, hey, you know what? We need to be more responsive because we no longer have a captive audience. We have to do better. We have to deliver better to students, and we have to be more responsive to parents. Because right now, a lot of parents feel like they can't get anywhere when they have a problem or if their student's not learning. They're just kind of stuck. And when you have more options, they're forced to be more responsive. It's really incredible. There are other states where this is happening, but Florida's been doing it the longest, and that's why their education down there continues to get better. I mean, better and better every year, the performance across the board in private schools and in public schools.
Yeah, you know what's so sad to me? Speaking of what, the schools having to be better, having to be more responsive because they're going to have to be. They want the butts in the seats. They're going to have to do better, right? The idea that we even had to go to court to prevent kids from being exposed to LGBT books when they're 8 years old. I mean, can you even imagine that had to even go to court? I mean, you can't buy cigarettes till you're 18. You can't get certain video games till you're 18. What, are you kidding me? And this was even an issue that parents should have the right to not have to put their kid in there? I mean, really?
Well, wow. Again, like if the parents had the ability to say, you know what, this isn't the right fit for us, we're going to go to this other school because they don't have that there, those problems would resolve themselves. And I feel like legislators across the country are trying to push back on things that are happening in schools, but they're late and they're not as responsive. And it takes years sometimes for this litigation to go through. In the meantime, something else pops up that you don't really want in your schools. But if people could leave, if you go to a grocery store and you don't like what they're selling, you go to a different one, or you don't like the way they treat you, or it's not the right fit, right? Like some people like Whole Foods, some people like Aldi. They should be able to go to whichever one that they like. So that it should be the same with, it's even more important with education, honestly. And, this generation who missed a lot of learning because of COVID, and that was forced upon us. And a lot of people started opting for private schools because they wanted, their kids didn't learn well online. Some kids do, many kids don't. But a lot of private schools really thrived during that time because so many parents were like, my child is not learning in front of a screen. Or maybe I don't want my kid in front of a screen 8 hours a day. I mean, that's the other thing, too. I mean, it works for some, but not for all.
Well, that's true. And also, people also found out what kind of garbage was being taught their kids, too. If they were being taught anything, a lot of parents had no idea of some of the things that were being taught. So that was eye-opening for them during COVID.
Yeah, it was probably one of the good things that came out of all this is more parents became aware of what was happening or not happening in schools and how much time was being spent on things that really were not about learning to read, write, history, those sort of basic things that we expect of schools. So I think it was a real eye opener. And from that perspective, I'm grateful.
Yeah, but you know what? The bottom line is, who owns your children? Some of these people, you hear what they say. They feel like they own your child. I'm sorry, you don't own my child, but that's the way some of them, not all of them, but some of them actually think.
Yeah, I agree with you, but I have to say, I know teachers. I know most of the teachers I know really work hard. They feel like it's a calling.
Yes.
And I don't think that these national unions really represent the teachers that I know, right? And I feel like they've been misrepresented for a long time. And I'm not sure how to fix that. But I do know that the school choice, teachers end up making more money when they're school choice. Those schools attract better teachers. They compete for teachers. So that creates a better environment for them as well. And we do have a teacher shortage here in Missouri. So we need to create an environment that's more attractive for them to work and thrive, to be in schools where they feel like, they are teaching things they want to teach and that they can be responsive without having, someone put their thumb on them about, no, don't talk to the parents, we'll do it for you, or whatever it is. So I really feel like school choice is good for, it's good for teachers too. And we've seen polling that shows that 3 out of 4 teachers actually support school choice vouchers, ESAs, those sort of things. So these people know, they're in schools every day and they support it. So I think that we just got to move in that direction.
Yeah. Teachers have a choice as to where they work, don't they?
Well, and a lot of can take their teachers. So if they teach in a district that they don't live in, they can take their kids to that school so they can practice sort of an open enrollment, but nobody else can, which isn't really fair. If they can do it, if it's so great, why can't everybody else do it?
Right. Just want to do what you're doing. That's the truth. Jean Evans, thanks for being on the Mark Reardon Show. She's a state lead for the American Federation for Children. Thank you for looking out for the rights of the kids because they don't vote. And, we really have to watch out for them, make sure they have the right education going forward.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Yeah, it's important. I mean, how hard is school choice? Let the kids choose. What are you so worried about? You're freaked out. You're going to lose some kids? Can't indoctrinate them all. And I know some fabulous people who were teachers. And she's right. It is a calling. I know some people who actually retired from a major school district and they moved to other parts of the country to continue teaching, to continue giving back. Because guess what? Teachers don't quit because of the kids. They quit because of the administration. They don't get the job and go, oh, there are kids here. No, they want to make a difference and they have a calling. So they continue to do it. I'm Heidi Harrison from Mark Reardon. Saw something on X. Speaking of X, I know Ethan's all about X. This woman posted on X, we don't shame Christians who have a problem with children and babies being in church services enough. So I responded and I said, anywhere a cell phone should be silenced is where a baby should be silent. Does that make sense? Is that fair? Weddings, ceremonies? I'm not going down that road, but I'm not afraid to. It's just, it's interesting how people don't mind their child disrupting everybody else's ceremony. I remember years ago, I worked for the State Bar Association, right? And we had a big ceremony where all of the lawyers who had passed the bar exam were going to be, the Supreme Court justices were there and everything, and they were all going to be, you know, they were admitted to the bar, okay? And they passed their bar exam, okay? Big deal. And a lot of these people are pretty young, in their 30s, sometimes 40s. A lot of them had young children, fine. Keep them in the lobby. But they didn't. They brought babies in to the ceremony. And the entire time the Supreme Court justices were trying to talk, the babies were crying. And I couldn't believe it. I mean, babies don't belong where their quiet is necessary. Babies don't belong in that situation. And I love babies. That's not fair to the other people who wanted to hear what the Supreme Court justices had to say. Have somebody else come with you if you want your picture with your family that you've now been admitted to the bar. You want your picture? Great. Then bring your family. Have somebody out in the lobby with the children. And when the ceremony is over, get your picture. But bringing a child in who's going to disrupt everybody else, I don't understand that. That makes no sense to me. Children don't want to sit through a church service. They're a year old. Or two, or whatever. They don't want to sit through it. You're distracted because you're trying to keep them quiet. Everyone else is distracted when they make noise. I totally disagree. And I'll take the heat for that. That's okay with me. Coming up, this is very interesting. Home Depot co-founder and billionaire Ken Langone has retracted support for President Trump in recent years and had some nasty things to say about his tariffs, but he's changed course. We will talk about that next hour on the Mark Reardon Show, among other things. Dwayne Patterson is going to be joining us, who writes for Hot Air. You know him. He's Hugh Hewitt's producer. He's a good guy. We'll also talk a little bit more about what's going on with the Ukraine and the idea of sending weapons over there. I mean, when's this thing going to end? I don't know. You send weapons over, but the problem is Russia's can put all these people through a buzzsaw. They've got a huge amount of people they can put in a bus on. They don't care. Putin doesn't care how many people he kills. So is this going to help? I mean, obviously, Europe's looking at this and going, yeah, we need to help Ukraine because otherwise it's going to be our problem. So that's part of it, too. And I do think that Trump is he's trying to finish this the best way he possibly can. He's doing the best he can with this. We don't want this to escalate. We don't want World War III. Do not want that. And I think Trump very nearly averted World War III by dropping the Buster Bomb. By the way, if you get time, you can listen to my podcast on that, which is on the Odyssey app, Heidi Harris Show, where I interviewed a retired Air Force general about the Bunker Buster and about some of the things that were done in Operation Midnight Hammer, which was incredible. I mean, to have this weapon that was designed specifically for this purpose, not necessarily just for Iraq, but for this, but for this purpose, and to watch it just, they had to fly 30, did you know this? 36 hours, not 18, 36 hours round trip, 36 hours. Couldn't exactly get off and go wander around the lobby. 36 hours round trip to get in, to get out with anybody knowing. It was amazing. It's incredible. Would Biden have done that? And then you woke up. Yeah. Okay. Much more to come on the Mark Reardon Show. I'm Heidi Harrison for Mark Reardon.
Get more at 971talk.com.